All right, we are live here. What's up, everybody? We are on the X timeline, and Brendan, I forgot to tell you, we're streaming vertically. It's kind of a decision. I figure everybody's mobile now. Vertical is the way to look at folks.
That's a great idea. I feel like you have to embrace the mobile phones now.
Yeah,
much more so.
Yeah, and when you're watching a video, like even though landscape now X finally allowed it to go sideways. Holding a phone vertical versus sideways, like sideways, it's just like we're lazy. It gets heavy fast, you know?
Yeah, it does. Yeah, it's two hands. We want things in one hand, right? Yeah.
Yeah. So everybody, welcome to Decentralens. This is a weekly show where we talk about macro. A guest with me today is one of my favorite people in the space, Brendan Peters. It's funny because with Disco, I miss you. Have fun in South America with your family. I'm the OG, class of 2015 Bitcoin, and Disco's, I think, 2021. So came in at the peak of the last bull, and he's finally like, yay, we're in a new bull.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's his first. So he's starting his second cycle, right? But Brennan, like now I'm the noob neophyte. Brennan, tell us a little about yourself, but you are a class of 2010, correct?
2010, yeah. Serendipitously got into Bitcoin right out of college. Was able to mine it with my gaming rig, was building on it as an entrepreneur and full stack engineer, and just sort of kept going. Obviously didn't go as ham as I could have, but you never knew back then. I was also really poor back then.
So
Bennett got into the Ethereum pre-sale, and then just going from project to project, and obviously NFTs more recently. And yeah, it's been a fun ride. Ready for the next bull, ready for this bull, right? Good cycle. It's going to be a wild cycle.
Well, it's been so crazy. Yeah. So I'm going to do the intro now just so we have it officially. But Disco's out. Brennan, welcome. Thanks for coming in on such short notice. For all of you, we did, Brennan was nice enough in one of our first shows back in, it was probably October, we did a whole nouns episode, which is a really great one. So much has happened since then that I'm sure the update would be another full show. But appreciate you and appreciate you coming on.
Yeah, absolutely.
Welcome to Decentralens, where lifelong friends, Blutoshi and Disco, navigate the ever-evolving crypto landscape. With nuance as our North Star, our goal is to empower listeners with the insights to learn and to prosper.
All right, there it is. And just so you don't get confused, we do keep the... we'll keep the music on for a while. That's that little transition into the show. There's so much going on in the space right now. You know, obviously, you know, it's like, I guess the best way to describe the show and who I am, I don't want to speak for you, but it's like, it's kind of like degen during the day, maybe degen at night, but trying to stay a little above that, looking at the macro, trying to help people newer to the space, maybe newer to ordinals, newer to the NFT space, and just newer to crypto in general. Also, to understand like what the hell is going on without literally sitting on X all day and sitting on Discord all day and different groups trying to like navigate this and figure out kind of where the ball is headed for that day or week or whatever.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's a special place to be, because without understanding the macro, you just get into the weeds and you don't quite understand, you know, where markets are moving and just where, you know, culture is moving, because they're kind of one and the same nowadays.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think with the US ETFs being approved, and obviously this is a big world, and you know, when you live in America and you become fairly US centric, but it is the biggest, you know, financial market in the world. And when those ETFs open, you know, Bitcoin actually went down, I think, from the people trying to front run, but then it has steadily gone up, broke all time highs, but now we've retraced here. And you know, it's interesting. We had our first two negative days in the ETFs. I mean, it was up 10 or 11 billion. GPTC is obviously, you know, because their fees are so high, that trust was set up kind of odd. They've got legal troubles, not GBTC, but other parts of that company, and people seem to be running for the doors. So we had a big retrace down to the low 60s again from what I think we peaked. I don't know what the new all-time high is, but it's like 73, maybe in clip 74. I don't know, as a fifth cycler or seventh cycler, I guess at some point you stop counting cycles when the numbers get too crooked. But like, does any of this even, do you even look at any of this or give a crap about any of the ups and downs of Bitcoin anymore?
Yeah, no, I mean, I do track, but I track macro cycle plays. So, and this is just part of the retracing that happens during the bull. You can look back at every cycle and you'll see 20 to 40% corrections on the way up, with rapid turnaround. What you don't want to see, which would be really interesting indicator, is if we start to crab at lower levels. I think that's, and again, we're in a nuanced position because of the inflows for the ETF, where we have new participants. I mean, every cycle you have new participants, right. But now you have massively new participants. So again, we've never hit all-time highs before halving. Usually it's post-halving, right? So we're just in a interesting cycle. So I pay attention just because I think it's interesting psychology of markets, because Bitcoin is so fluid, right? It's really easy to get in and out versus any other market, right? There is no other liquid market out there versus crypto, right? And yeah. So it's really interesting to see how the psychology will change from cycle to cycle, but these retraces are pretty known that
they're healthy too, right? I mean, if you're up only, at some point you gotta kind of get the shorts out and just crush them and kind of reestablish kind of lows and stuff like that too, right?
And it's also a lot of the buyers from last cycle feel like they made money and they just are like, fuck it. I'll tell if they held, I hope they hold. But if they held from the last cycle, they're like, oh my God, I actually am profit. Should I like trim down, or should I just, you know what? This is not the market for me. I'll just exit and wait. And so you do see a lot of that happen. But also people who did buy at the bottom will take profit. It's a healthy take profit, right? Funds included, in which they'll basically just start to put that, you know, put their P&L in a good position for the year early. Right. And then they'll, you know, just wait it out and either rebuy or use that cash for something else. Right. So I think it's just notable. Yeah.
You said something interesting. You, and I knew this trend, you said all time highs. Everyone always thinks it's in anticipation of the halving, like, oh, the rewards, you know, the miner rewards are going to be cut in half. But the generally the all time highs are like, they're not even right after the halving. They're generally 8, 9, 10 months after, aren't they?
Later. Yeah. So usually around October, November. Yeah.
So based on the April 18th, you're saying 6, 7 months is when you should really see that pinch.
Yeah. And that's looking post all time high. That's the all time high for the cycle, happens 8 to 9 months after the halving. Where we're looking at is the very short breach of last cycle's all-time high, which I don't consider this cycle's all-time high, right? So we've had a breach, and that breach doesn't actually happen until usually after the halving, which is shortly after usually. And then it starts marching upwards, again, retracing. But then usually 8 to 9 months is when you start to see, oh shit, this is the real all-time high, right? You know, when you go from 20 to 70, and now is it, you know, 70 to, you know, I have numbers, I can share them, but, you know, I don't want people to take those seriously because I have unserious numbers in my head.
No, but this is, on this show, we always say, this is not financial advice. Nothing we do. We are not investment advisors. We are not telling you what to do. We're just trying to make sense of a market with past data and with intuition and what's going on and any models we can to figure it out. But again, this isn't financial advice, but yeah, feel free to share. I mean, that's why you're here. That's why we're here, to try and figure it out from a anecdotal view so we can talk about it.
Yeah. I mean, so I know I always just look at factors of three. So like, what is a factor of three on seven, right? So you're looking at 210,000 plus. So, I mean, that's kind of what I start to look at. And then really it's the timeline of when that happens. You know, typically it's the following year, November, is when you start to see it start to drop in the realization. But I don't know. I think timeline for this cycle is going to be a bit weird just because of the ETF. Usually you have now more static money that's not going to change a lot of hands, because most people are buying the ETFs through a 401k and they're not going to actively manage that all the time.
Right.
And so, yeah, you'll have a lot more people not willing to sell off once you start to hit these highs. So I think it's going to be interesting where, you know, we may actually have either a longer cycle where we'll have more retraces during that period. So you'll see a lot more of these 20%, you know, drops over the course of the next 2 years.
Just because of longs and shorts and just...
Yeah, I just think funds and massive treasuries for a lot of these ETF inflows, they won't just buy at the efficiency of people buying the demand of the ETF. They're going to buy in chunks, they're going to wait, and they're going to be tactile about it, right? So I think you'll just see big purchase orders happen when the market corrects from other retail investors sort of coming, you know, being like, okay, I'll take profit now. So it's just going to be really weird. And I don't think it's going to be uniform as it was in the last four cycles.
Yeah.
Your
whole 3X theory is interesting. Like, so that would say like, yeah, we could maybe hit 210,000. Do you feel like this cycle's different? Only that the ETFs have opened up. We know that, you know, all these institutions, the 11 ETFs have all these conduits to different investment brokerage houses of different levels, you know, family, the guys at the corner of the Raymond James of the world. From what I've heard is a lot of these wire systems and kind of the infrastructure for that, and even really the approval for the pension funds and for all these different big whales. You know, we talk about whales in our NFT and our ordinal space. And then you're just talking about big money, trillions under assets like BlackRock or Fidelity, but even these investment brokers with billions in assets, like all it takes for them to put 3% in some of these guys or corporate treasuries, like we haven't even seen that yet. So I guess for me at some point, like last week we did the stat and, you know, 900 Bitcoin before the halving are mined a day. It's about to turn into 450 Bitcoin. Yep. An estimate, I think it was about 2,600 Bitcoin were being scooped up by the ETFs. Now, maybe that was that first 30, 35 days, and we saw two negative days the other day. But any sort of big movements, and I just feel... At some point, isn't it the steamroller on the tube of toothpaste? Like it just goes and there's nowhere for it to go but keep going up? Or is that kind of wishful thinking where it goes to 800,000, 900,000? Because literally, you know, El Salvador, everyone's trying to buy it. Qatar, Japan apparently is now considering, it'll take them a while to do all the due diligence, but $1.43 trillion pension fund is considering buying Bitcoin and being, you know, because obviously everyone's chasing stocks and bonds up this massive risk curve. And Nvidia, I think, is trading at like 80x future earnings. Like we all believe in Nvidia and AI, but 80x, like at some point you're gambling pretty far into the future, maybe with Nvidia having kind of, I don't want to say a monopoly, but they're certainly the best game in town. But like, is it just getting ridiculous? And could we see a squeeze like nothing we've ever seen before?
Yeah, I think you're right. If you start to see big, massive other treasuries, like countries specifically, if they start to feel like this is now so hardened because of people like BlackRock or groups, organizations like BlackRock, they feel like it's a safe bet where they're always worried about, you know, US isn't going to just turn around and ban Bitcoin because of BlackRock's holdings. They're just going to lobby to where it doesn't, right? It's a net loss for them if Bitcoin all suddenly just gets banned, right? And that was always what people worried is, would the US ever outright just strictly ban the transaction of Bitcoin on a US sovereign.
It seems like if they could have, and not everybody, it seems like, you know, and this is not a political show, but it seems like if Elizabeth Warren and this silly army she's creating, I assume for political points and votes, I guess, like to me, it seems like you're going to screw yourself. And I think the Democratic Party is taking, is in general, the wrong stand on that. And they're going to lose voters that way. But like, you can't ban Bitcoin. You can only make it harder for your citizens to benefit and use Bitcoin. And you can send jobs overseas and innovation overseas by banning things within the industry. And I feel like Gensler, and I feel like he has much higher marching orders because the guy was teaching that stuff at MIT. He's no dummy. Yeah. He probably holds personal Bitcoin. I assume those were his marching orders, but at some point the regime's got to change. And it's out there. And now, like you said, the lobbyists with BlackRock, Fidelity, they're already, I think BlackRock's like the number three ETF ever after 35 days. Fidelity just went to number five. And we just started like that lobby money. They'd be like, no, this, you're not putting this one back in the bag.
Yeah, exactly. And countries see that. And so they feel like it's safe to start to diversify into this asset class. And so that's when you really see it. I didn't think it was actually going to happen this cycle. I thought it would take a cycle. They would realize it's stable. They would realize that actually at the end of the cycle, it didn't drop 80%. I think it's going to be a little bit softer. And now they feel, wow, this is really good. So you're looking at, you know, basically, you know, 2028 as countries really start to adopt, right? I still think that's the schedule, but you might see some hints of that happening sooner than later, which is really cool. And then again, the numbers, again, the cycle changes. And yeah, and it's just, like you said, it's a massive run up, right? And so it's, I don't know. I've always been super bullish, but all at the same time, trying to be realistic with how slow things can move. Because just because we're talking about it now, you know, obviously it takes, you know, to start moving treasuries from countries over to holding Bitcoin a very, very long time.
Yeah. There's someone they call Mr. Bitcoin, I guess. They buy 100 Bitcoin a day and they're speculating it could be Qatar, it could be more El Salvador, but El Salvador apparently has even more Bitcoin than thought. So it's so funny because we're US centric, but this is truly the one global coin. And I would argue, you know, with the Powell, I think is doing comments today, or maybe he's doing them right now. So we're competing with him. I'm sure there's a lot of overlap in that audience. But I wonder if Bitcoin now is keeping the government from having to keep interest rates higher to keep inflation down, because now we have an off ramp. Is that fair, or? Are we so early still? We've drinking the Kool-Aid. Yes, that will be a truth in the long run, but they're not even plugged into any of this. The boomers and the folks who run all this right now, that they're thinking ahead to realize the more you let that dollar inflate, the more we have an off ramp, certainly with gold, but of Bitcoin too.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, when interest rates start to drop again to ease the economy, I mean, a lot of it is going to be interesting because, I mean, I always felt like real estate was a big driver for what's happening. And I feel like, at least for interest rates, because a lot of people build their wealth around their house, right? Like that's the concept that's always been, mostly from the boomer economy, right? It's their 401k, but I don't know, you know, talking to, a few people in the positions where retirement's coming up or has come up, they're still interested in thinking about, oh, well, we're living a lot longer. You know, being and allocating assets to the ETF is important for me. And I think people are starting to see that where like, oh, this, you know, even if I'm going to, you know, not making any more income, but diversifying my own 401k, I think people are going to start to realize that. So again, I don't know. I don't know how sticky versus inflation is the sort of the run up.
Got it. You're saying long term, yes. How much impact now? Who knows? But the fact that they're keeping interest rates high, it's, you know, especially with how political everything gets, especially in an election year, it's interesting because now with that, like digital gold, if you will, it I think it makes it a lot better. And just to kind of put a punctuation before we move on Brennan's point, the Brian Armstrong posted a really great chart, and I don't expect people to be able to see this, but this is the U.S. national debt from 1996 to now. It was $5 trillion in 96. They say the president was a couple things that are going on, but you can see obviously it's going up, but you know, we're kind of starting under the Trump era. And I don't think honestly it matters which president it was. Like Obama started the beginning of the hockey stick, but it just got worse and worse. And now in these Biden years, it's going higher and higher. And obviously the more debt you have, the more you have to pay the interest to service the debt, and the more kind of behind the eight ball you get as other countries don't buy, or certainly aren't, your treasuries aren't the number one safe asset in the world anymore. So just kind of an interesting data point.
Yeah, it's, you know, I've always felt like debt for the U.S. is just a leverage vehicle to grow your economy faster. And so at the same time, as much as, you know, we want to get to be a budget sensitive nation, if we stop, we will like kind of crumble as a society. I think we live off debt. I think debt is the new capitalization model for countries to live on. And so it's one of those things where I don't get too worried, because at the end of the day, it's a social contract in a way with all the other participants. And that if we all agree that, you know, the future value of us spending the money today, over and above what we have or what we're making, we know that the future impact is great, right? Just like, you know, futures on NVIDIA and AI. If we keep, it's we've always grown off spending. And as long as consumers are spending, the countries can spend and we can keep moving in that direction. There's obviously a sensitive balance there, but I don't know. I don't even know if Bitcoin really solves a lot of that, because people think like, oh, if we're just denominated in Bitcoin, like we'd be totally fine. Like we'd be able to fix all these things. Right. Probably not. I mean, you can even look at crypto economies where, you know, we're all fucking levered up. Like, I mean, people are even lending and borrowing off their NFTs to get access to debt vehicles that way. And you're like, holy shit, this is like, yeah, this is like an entire art lending model that is flooding the market. Yeah.
The most illiquid thing you could do, because JPEGs, you know, collections are super liquid for a little while and then they're not. Yeah. And when they're not, like, you either, if you really got to sell, you dump under the floor. But if you're lending, like to me, it seems like I've never been a leverage in a like lending borrow guy. Cause to me, it just seems like all it takes is for a little mini black swan, not even a big one, but just it takes for a couple events to happen or have a downturn in the market. And you're basically locked out of the thing you own, and you're probably not going to end up winning in that situation, you know?
Yeah, it's very, you have to be pretty sure about the bet you're going to make with that liquid capital that you just got from your NFT, right? Because that's usually what people think. I can go place this bet because I think it's a for sure win, exit that bet and buy back the NFT plus have capital gain, right? Have some ETH or Bitcoin or whatever they're offering. Right. Because I know Bitcoin and if ordinal NFT lending is coming or has come.
A good friend of both of ours has, I don't know if you know this, they have 3 ordinal punks that they were on the lending side, and they have 3 ordinal punks because of that. And that's what brought them in.
That's awesome.
This bit. Yeah. So
yeah,
there's the other side. Like, I'll lend you. Yeah, sure. I'll take super high interest, and at worst, I'll take your underlying assets. So for him, that was a win, and it actually allowed him to get in the space. He's a big AI guy. So usually people are in crypto, and then I feel like now they're dabbling in AI. This guy's been in AI for 10 years and then went backwards into crypto. I'm like, how cool is that? Like these new avenues to kind of get into this, because at the end of the day, AI and crypto all go together, because with all the deep fakes and everything, like if we don't have private public key signatures or something to validate that Blutoshi or Brennan or whoever signed this thing, anything could be faked, you know? So it's almost like it was providence that this all kind of evolved around the same time. I don't know, luck or whatever, but it's huge.
Well, it's also ASICs and optimize mining GPUs help solve a lot of the AI issues. And so NVIDIA got really big on not only producing, you know, better chips and better GPUs, is now they can use that for AI. So it's like they kind of also go in the same direction, is like greed led them to innovation, which led them to supporting the AI movement, the machine learning and LLM movement. It's kind of one of those things where I think they all just stacked on top of each other.
Right.
Because machines, at the end of the day, crypto is just run on machines. And the more optimized machine you have, the more money you will make.
Right. But don't you think just with encryption and the way their Bitcoin set up, or even Ethereum, like public private keys and whatever it is, SHA-256 and all the encryption, like what other way, and this is kind of off topic, but it's fascinating. What other way is there to solve all the deep fakes? I mean, look at our crypto space. I mean, it is rampant with scammers.
You could sign. I mean, anyone can use their own key to sign a fake, right? So it doesn't solve the trusted asset or the thing that you created as proof, because I could just sign it and say, oh, this was real. This was me, or this was a situation in which I took the photo and sign it. And it was a, you know, think about a video or an image of someone doing something and be like, oh, I'll sign it. It's good to prove who signed it, but it's not good to prove what is the actual content. Was that content real? That hasn't been solved yet. You need to reverse basically scan and be like, was this produced in reality, or is this still AI generated, right?
So I think the only thing you can prove is that, you know,
who created
Blutoshi's Farcaster account. If I've got the private public key signer, do they even have, or are they just regular login? I don't remember.
They have. Signature.
So if it's not from my account, I could at least have plausible deniability. Whereas with Web2 logins, I could have been hacked. I guess my keys could have been hacked too. Sure. So it sounds like you're saying you're getting part of the way there, but you're not all the way there. It's a much bigger problem.
Yeah, it's a much bigger problem. Proof of content is going to be something that will be solved hopefully in the next 10 years, or it's going to run rampant for a while, where anything posted on the internet, even if verifiable, come from a single source, can't be, you know, doesn't mean it's trusted, right? Just because it came from a single source, right? Even if that source is someone you know, they could still be lying to you. I mean, that's all it is.
Well, and look how impressionable we all are. Like, the more you hear something, even if they're lies, like, you have to be very disciplined just to be like, wait, this isn't true. And the more it's repeated, then the more other people kind of buy in and repeat it. You're like, oh man, this is dangerous, you know? So even if it's proved to be a fake, people's mental space 6 months later be like, oh yeah, that video where Biden said this, oh, that was fake. But it's like, it's already been etched in your brain. And I'm just using that example that never happened, but it's crazy.
That happens in social media. Like, people generate fake content for, you know, obviously likes and, you know, and basically to generate a social presence. And there are unique situations that cause people to be like, oh wow, that's crazy. But they all are proven to be faked over time. So even AI, even removing AI, you know, that still became a problem, right? Like, what is a real thing? But does content in an entertainment situation, does it care? Do you care if it's real or not, right? But yeah, it's when it starts getting into like an actual political discussion, or, you know, anything that has impact to your life, then that's where it gets like really fucked up.
Well, and the influencers, like you said, if they're peddling lies, I mean, let's go there. Let's talk about all the, we saw it on ETH for years in NFTs, the pumps and the organized influencers where they're peppering in, they're saying the same thing. And, you know, if you're not on the inside with these, you're like, this is the new mint. I got to get it. You know, anyone who is new to this space, like I could show you wallets of ETH NFTs. I'm like, what the hell was I thinking? And the longer you're in this, like I said, what am I, a 3 or 4 cycler? Like, you still can get manipulated. And Ordinals was very beautiful and clean for a while. That's probably a naive statement. Maybe that was just at the very beginning, like last January, February, and then it kind of died down. And then like you had Squirtles. I feel like that's when like, okay, who's going to stick around? And that's when like May, June, that's when a lot of us stuck around and just kind of planted our flag there. But all the influence, like how do you think about that? And how do you, to your point before, they, once the influencers have made their money and they walk on, it's like, oh, this was all organized and it was peddled bullshit. Well, they already made their 220 Bitcoin. So, and like they get off, you know, scot-free, you know, and that's the Wild West we live in now. But, you know, we're all susceptible to this influencer. I assume even you sometimes are like, ooh, that looks pretty cool. You're like, oh, Brandon, this is your 13th cycle. Like, it's toned down. Like, we can
and
wait.
Usually, and again, like you said, it comes from who do you respect in this space? And so there are certain people that I'm like, oh man, whatever they're buying usually resonates with me as well.
Right.
So I use those as signals. And at the end of the day, I try to put on my art collector, like what would I hang on my walls? Now, obviously these are digital walls. This is digital mind share. And so at the end of the day, if something's worthless, but you love it, then is it worthless? Is it still held value?
Right.
And that's why I typically, stay away from things where it's just a wave of something I wouldn't keep if it went to zero. Right. And that does help. That does help the cycle in terms of, yes, could I make money on this pump if I was in at the right time? But if I'm left holding the bag, so I just feel like a piece of shit. If so, if your answer is yes, I feel like a piece of shit holding this at the end of the day, probably don't get into it unless you are so certain. And then it's just gambling. Then you're just like, cool, I'll roulette wheel this totally.
Well, right. Yeah, and once you get into it, once you get into it, it's hard to be like, because then we're in a game often of if it is something that you really don't care if you hold it for the long run and you want it for a short run, you're in a game of musical chairs or hot potato, and you don't know when that potato is going to stop. Then you start like tricking yourself. You're like, oh, if I just wait a little longer, it's going to go up more. And then when it falls, probably because a group of 15 to 20 super influencers are like, ready, let's rip. And then they rip. And then, they tell everyone to buy just a little more than they're selling into they're selling into the buy pool. And then all of a sudden people are left, and there's casualties and it gets super ugly. Like, it's the longer you're in it, the better you get. And you're right. You pick the certain people. You're like, you know what? A, I know that person in real life, or B, like I've seen their posts, I follow them, I like what they say, and I trust them. Like I trust them, and they might make mistakes, but at least it sounds like you're saying that's your first barometer. But like, if you we just got Duresh's piece, who's a awesome.
Yeah.
He's been on ETH. I followed him for a while. I'm not collecting as much on ETH anymore, but the second that Daza told me that he had a 16 collection, his first Genesis thing on Ordinals, and I was like, this is a no-brainer. And then I reached out to you, Al, and a couple other people, just like, hey, seems like a no-brainer to me. And it sounds like you're saying you developed that network too of like,
that wasn't a social thing. I just absolutely loved his work.
Yeah,
I think there's a difference where I was like, oh shit, hell yeah, like photography and fucking Tokyo and this cool Ordinal aesthetics, like, dude, on it, this is easy buy, price was right, the pictures were right. Now the fact that I knew that y'all were also holders is helpful, because I know that y'all cherish good pieces and you're not trying to
flip,
basically just flip it. Right. And I think that's really good for low collections. It's like the LPMs. Right. And so I think there's a certain standard to me. I think that type of artwork is like, do you love it? Do you want to keep it?
Right.
That's totally fine. And then it's just it's usually PFP trash, or if we're getting straight into shit coins, it's just shit coins. You should never want to own shit coins because they never really unlock anything from a community perspective. They don't do anything. And that's why I have super high reservations where it is strictly gambling, where you shouldn't care if you have it or you don't have it. But if you think you're on the right, if you have an edge where you think you're on the right market based on what influencers have said or are buying, then play that game. That game is really fun, right? Gambling is fun.
Right.
But I don't want to hold that token forever. Like, you should never want to hold the token.
Well, and that's true hot potato, right? Like, so I don't know if you knew this, but I don't know how much you follow Solana. I'm not a big collector there. I don't buy art there because I'm still uncertain about the chain. Now that we have Ordinals, like, to me, it's I love on-chain ETH stuff, and I've got a Terraform behind me there, a nice black and white one that I love. And like you said, if Terraforms goes down, for me, the mixture of the coding and the art, which I consider you a coder, like, you've got many hats, and it's so cool with your Scordinals and now your reversion.life. So it's great to have you in the show. But I guess $150 million, which with all the TV, the total value locked in all these projects that haven't come out yet, $150 million actually isn't a lot, but $150 million have been locked in Solana pre-sale tokens, because, you know, ETH has been kind of crabby. ETH is like, ETH invented all this shit and they're like, wait for us, you know, and Solana and Bitcoin
last year.
Right. And Solana and Bitcoin are having their degen seasons. Solana got 150 million in pre-sales, literally people sending to individual wallet addresses. I guess this Slurp one, like the guy fat fingered and like sent 10 million like to a non-address, like just like who's running this? So you're talking about these shit coins, like a lot of people, I should say some people are making a lot of money, probably getting in, getting out. Are they getting Pico top? If they're behind the scenes influencers, they probably are, because they're manipulating this market. And everyone else is either getting wrecked or going to get wrecked unless they can catch the falling knife and kind of pre-predict a day before or whenever when the influencers are about to jump, you know, pump and jump.
Yep.
So,
yeah, I mean, we saw that playbook happen in ETH a year ago. And even before that,
with the ICOs. ICOs,
official ICOs were literally these pump and dumpsies where a lot of them were pre-sales. Technically, Ethereum was a pre-sale first ICO where it was like, hey, give this guy named Vitalik your fucking Bitcoin and hope it works out. I mean, that's why if I knew obviously today what the return would be, I'd fucking give him everything.
Oh my God. They're like, dude, here's my mortgage.
I'd sell my house immediately. That's the thing is like, but it was a black box. It was a literally send Bitcoin to an address and hope, and literally hope that they send you whatever this Ethereum is going to be, Ether is going to be. And you're like, this sounds dope. Computable smart contract. That sounds dope. Vitalik looks like a goddamn big brain alien man. Like, I trust that he knows the future somehow. Yeah. And so that is a type of, it was a different type of move where your influencers and are technologists, and you had to trust that the white paper communicated reality. And so you would read these white papers, and this is coming in the 2016-17 bubble or cycle. And you made more mid-curve decisions where you would analyze, you would think about it. But some people just jumped in. They're like, fuck it. I pray and spray every ICO and I just get in, right? And I just send to a wallet and that's it, right? Some of them got sophisticated where they actually had the full lock-ins and you were using Coinless and you were verified, blah, blah, right. blah, blah, blah. But it was the same shit.
Right.
And then after that cycle, we moved into legitimate. They're not about technology plays. This is where the meme coins came in. Like anyone could just go launch a shit coin, get a bunch of memes, get the hype cycle going, have a culture movement, but it's the same repetitive thing. And now it's moving to L2s where you're doing the same thing that L1s were. You're still not a technologist. You're even more degen, right?
And are so we talking like, the Optimisms, the big guys?
Yeah, the Optimisms like Basis, but even Solana is still, I consider it an L2 in the sense of like winning. It sort of established itself. It also goes down. So again, I have reservations for any blockchain that does not have 100% uptime. You're not a blockchain. Just use AWS. What are you doing? So that's
are they literally using AWS? I know you have to have
No, they're not. It's just a collective set of validators that are running and
pre-approved validators from and these are all
could be running on AWS. They're probably running on bare metal, but you never know. Right.
But the Solana base team, like, and maybe ETH will had this beginnings too, but the base team, it's VC, right? And they kept so much of the like, if we look at sometimes staking charts and ETH, I think is at 26, 27%, which is nice. You know, you get your 3%. Yeah. And if you get a couple, you know, that's just the, what is it, 3.4. But if you get a couple proposals accepted, like I got lucky last year when I can't remember what the big pump in ETH was last summer, but there was like a 3-day thing where everyone was trying to front run each other. And I had just started validating a month before and I got a 1.4 EVM like reward for proposing the block. I was like, damn, like that literally made, I was like, well, you're made, you know? So haven't had that luck since. But on the other side, Solana is literally, it's 70 or 80% stake. The numbers are insane. They're insane. Yeah. And a lot of that, you know, here's the number right here. It's 64.28. And the rewards equal the inflation. So it's kind of like just a forward moving Ponzi, right? So Do you think Solana, I mean, there's room for multiple chains in this world. And sure. When ETH gas fees got expensive, like if I first, I couldn't, I was like, get out of your ETH mind where you've had ETH for a long time and $92 gas fees. You know, I'm sure you're like me, like, yeah, if it's super high, I might do a thing later. But if there's something I got to do, I'm just going to do it. You know, like I'm going to pay the gas fees. Where Solana, they keep them pushed way down. Like, do you think Solana's got a shot to be the true number three, or it's all going to Bitcoin?
I mean, honestly, I have other projections. I think the amount of options people have on this, on computable, let's call it computable smart contracts, right? These Turing complete ecosystems, right? Which Bitcoin is not, or they're going to spread really thin. So the Bitcoin dominance overall is going to increase. So last year, the ETH BTC ratio could get to 0.1, like it could hit it, right? In 0.07. It's going down every cycle. And I think you could hit 0.04, which is way less than it is now. So it's 0.055.
Can I interject one thing? When ETH gets, you know, it probably won't happen in this cycle, it'll probably happen next year, but at some point ETH will get an ETF too. Don't you feel like Bitcoin, part of the runaway is from that? Or you're saying no, because the global adoption is still going to be,
I think that's what
there
makes,
first.
Yeah. I think it, what makes ETH stickier and still the number two, but it doesn't make it increase as much as Bitcoin will. So the idea is that dominance will continue to go towards Bitcoin because there are more outflows from Ethereum to other chains, right? We haven't even seen Bearchain launch mainnet. And I think Bearchain, and I'll talk about this with proof of liquidity, and we should have an entire other podcast on proof of liquidity, which I think is a genius way to create an amazing Ponzi scheme. Like, it literally rewards.
I thought you were saying an amazing like ecosystem. No, like it's Ponzi scheme.
I mean, everything is built on this idea of like Ponzi economics, right? But what they have done is allow anyone to participate in block rewards without actually being an official validator. And it has this really unique way of locking people in. And they've also have pre-compute. So basically smart contracts deployed at the actual root blockchain levels to create a massive liquidity pool across the entire chain. Think of them of creating the biggest casino L2, right? Where the whole ecosystem is about to be like completely liquid.
Bear a Bitcoin L2 or a totally separate chain?
No. Bear chain is actually built on Cosmos ecosystem, but it's an EVM. It's a computable smart contract system with basically predefined smart contracts deployed at the root level. And they want to be the meme ecosystem. Like the idea being that no one's actually fully adopted. I would say Phantom was that ecosystem last cycle and it was Solana versus Phantom as being like one and two in terms of who is going to dominate the faster smart contract systems.
Got it.
Bearchain, I think, will suck up so much liquidity because of the way they're doing their block reward system and some of the stuff they're launching on it. And I think that's going to move so much money from Solana, still from Phantom, from the other L2 optimistic rollups and Ethereum in general.
You think you think it'll steal from ETH too?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. And so when they launch this year, I think you're going to see it's going to hurt a lot of people in this ecosystem that are still relying that like, oh, Solana is the best. Now, Solana will always exist because there's so much VC money and a lot of like, they're going to be more of like the gamer chain. You're going to start seeing a lot of these game studios that last cycle got funded to build games using Solana. And so
because they literally struck deals with the Solana.
Oh, exactly.
The foundation, the VCs, basically.
But also they think about game economies as already being these sort of Ponzi economic systems. Just there's no off ramp, right? You're just moving them over. You're just saying that now these game economies now have ability to actually be more liquid. But they've already been used to token economies. And so they know how to implement incentive systems and reward systems that people will really love. And I think that is going to keep Solana pretty, pretty happy. But I think the alternatives, like you look at what Base is doing with Coinbase. If Base is the fastest optimistic rollup, and is the easiest to onboard because it's directly from Coinbase.
I can move from Coinbase
base immediately, right? It's actually part of their ecosystem.
Right.
That is going to suck up so much liquidity, right? It's there's only so much liquidity in the system, and obviously.
But doesn't that benefit that benefits Ethereum being on Optimism as a layer two, correct? Because if I'm validating, I'm still eventually getting that rolled up. I know with the Denkun upgrade that it made super cheap the roll-ups from, I'm probably using the wrong terminology, but the layer two costs to transact because they can blob these things together in much bigger masses and kind of create these blobs. But isn't that just supporting Ethereum as...
It is. It is more so because on Base, the token, the gas token is ETH still. Right. So you're not swapping into a new token and driving the price for Ethereum down because you don't have lockups. So Base is probably the one savior for Ethereum that I see, unless they start to implement their own gas token or they swap it out for something else. You never know what Coinbase wants to do.
So you're saying with ZK, a lot of these other layer twos, almost all of them like Matic, you're saying the gas token on their layer two is their own token, and you're saying that doesn't help ETH at all, even though
no.
It rolls down.
You're selling ETH for that token, so it's going to drive the price down, right?
And so you're saying it's almost a one-to-one. ETH, basically, you put the ETH for the Matic token, and then you're getting rewards in Matic. ETH is validating the network, but doesn't even get the...
No. ETH doesn't validate Polygon's network.
I thought Polygon was a layer two. Okay.
It's not an optimistic layer two. So you run validators running Matic, right? So you need Matic, right, to be a validator. And so you're swapping Ethereum for this other token. So anytime you have to swap out of your base token, you're driving the price down because arbitrageurs will look across every pool and bridge and they'll find an equilibrium, right? It's like water, right? If you take a whole bucket and swap all your ETH for Matic, the Ethereum price needs to adjust to that, right? Across the board, right? Obviously. And if you do that simultaneously across all these other providers, the only one that's making ETH feel nice is Base because their ETH is their gas cost. Right?
So you're saying not even all Optimism projects are using ETH as
the Optimism base. Uses OP. So you'd be selling ETH for OP.
So
and
Base
OP runs transactions. Yeah.
Okay. So Base just happened. So you can do it where ETH is the Base chose because they're on Optimism.
Yes.
So why are those? So layer two is kind of a bullshit term then. Like they're not really, they're almost side chains then. If you're not using.
Exactly. If you're not using the Ethereum as your gas, you're basically an L2 side chain.
So I know you're an ETH fan, just like I am. And, you know, most of our interest is focused on ordinals and Bitcoin right now. But are you concerned ETH long run because of all this?
No, that's what I was saying. Yeah. I still think it's
dude, yeah, that's what I'm telling you.
I told you the ETH BTC ratio. I don't care about cash. I don't care about USD. I care about the relationship between Bitcoin and whatever asset I'm talking about.
So you don't even think in US dollars anymore. You've already...
No, at this point, I look at optimizing what will be a better driver. And if ETH BTC ratio is going to go down, that means my Ethereum will buy me less Bitcoin in the future, then I should be holding more Bitcoin, right? And then if I ever want to go buy back ETH to operate and do things, then I'll have more Ethereum in the future because I'll be able to use spend my Bitcoin for Ethereum. So I look at ETH BTC ratio as a really key driver. And I like to do that with a lot of tokens. It's something that, you know, when I ran a fund or helped run a fund, we were a Bitcoin denominated fund. And so we looked at those ratios really closely. We didn't really care about, because it's not about growing US dollars, it's about growing Bitcoin. If you think Bitcoin's going to $1 million over the next decade, then you don't give a shit about the US dollar. It will actually distract you. You should just be stacking as much Bitcoin as possible.
And I think that's the philosophy. Do you mind if I ask, are you, I know Peter McCormack talks about this all the time. Is your base holdings far more Bitcoin than fiat, or are you still caught in both worlds? Like,
most people? No, I am way more Bitcoin.
Okay. So you,
which is Yeah, my wife has more is the cash holder.
Okay, so at least you have a balance in your family in case something goes. But the more you're in this, because that's the conclusion I'm coming to. The more I'm in this, like sometimes I feel guilty. Like I own a small company. I've had it for 15 years now, and I don't want to say it runs itself now, but it's nice, and we've got it managed well and everything. And when I have excess cash, I keep. Every year I buy more and more Bitcoin, but I still have, you know, even what 2015, I'm almost 10 years in, I'm full nine. And I still like feel guilty to be like, oh, I'm allocating too heavily Bitcoin. And mentally the flip has switched where I'm like, no, I'm allocated too heavy cash. Cash is to spend cash. Like we've been taught to be consumers our whole life. Like, overtly, because that's what drives the economy and the GDP. I think 70% of it is consumer purchases. But indirectly, when you have inflation, even if it's 2 or 3 or 4%, and obviously Bitcoin right now, you know, at 6.25, what is it? It probably is 2% now, but we know it's going down and we know there's a limited supply at the end of the day. So to me, that's not even inflationary and the demand's going to be super high. Whereas with cash right now, the more you get into the Bitcoin and the more cycles you go through, the more you realize that it's the only place to really hold money to accrue. We're working to make Bitcoin that it's the first time in history where we have something where we can put our current energy into something that can generate, and I'm talking about money as energy, our future energy and purchasing power is greater, probably far greater than it is now.
Yeah, absolutely. And I'm 90%+ allocated to crypto. I keep very little cash, and it actually hurts when I have to sell to do some other IRL investments, either that's land purchasing or just investing into companies with cash. I mean, there's certain things that cash still operates, but I mean, I've been buying things like art, like, you know, trad art pieces with Bitcoin. You know, it feels bad now because I had to spin it, but it's part of the process of getting more people to adopt it, because I hope one day, it's like that whole Neo thing. I don't know if you've ever seen that meme. It's back a long time ago. It's like, oh, you're saying that Bitcoin is going to be worth millions in the future. And then, you know, Morpheus goes, no, I'm saying when you're ready, you won't even need to sell Bitcoin. You know what I'm saying? It's like one of those things where everything will just transact on the network. Yeah, exactly. So to me, maximizing stacking Bitcoin through trading or other means, right, is kind of the key goal. And so looking at ratios that allow me to do that is more interesting than looking at a specific USD to whatever price, because ETH will keep running, Bitcoin will keep running, but at what rate, right? And that's what I think Bitcoin will slowly outpace now that all these L2s and other alternative L1s are coming up, which do create better viable scenarios, right? They have more interesting use cases because now we're getting smarter at writing protocols, and we're just developing that next set of interesting utilities that could come that Ethereum can adapt to, but Ethereum is still pegged to some of its old legacy. You know, basically, it's just slow still. It's just
so slow. So you will hold. So your base currency in Brennan's world is Bitcoin, and I think for me, I would agree with that as well. Like I said, my family members might have different ideas, and maybe as a, I don't know why it would be a good balance to have cash on the other side, but you know, I guess if something went wrong, are you, you know, I'm not saying I have a bunch of ETH validators, but I might. Like, are you saying with L2s, that's, you know, cause I see it as a deflationary currency, you know, the number, the more ETH gets used, the number of ETH, you know, because of, of burning goes down. And that is, you know, even cooler to me than Bitcoin before Bitcoin brought ordinals and now is getting runes in these L2s. Is it sounds like you're saying even with Ethereum, you go into Ethereum specifically into different marketplaces to buy it. But if you had a perfect world where you can move stuff around, it's always in Bitcoin and then you move it to a different chain depending on what you need. Is that fair, or no, you still strike a balance?
Yeah, exactly. It becomes, again, your own vault of wealth generation to then go buy other stuff to go use it in a commodity world, right? Where if everything is then going to be transacted over certain L2s, there are bridges to move from Bitcoin to those things. And if Bitcoin just keeps pacing that from a wealth generation perspective, then I'll just have more of whatever it's going to transform into, right? And so again, I was mainly Ethereum because the pre-sale was able to generate a bunch of ETH that really eclipsed the growth of Bitcoin during the same period of time, right? Up until basically it peaked in the 2017.1. And then it started slowly going down. And that's when I realized, I was like, oh, I think we're in a distribution model for these computable smart contract networks. And so holding more Bitcoin is going to be more profitable to be able to have more purchasing power in the future, where Ethereum will still have, I think, more purchasing power than maybe some other tokens out there. But, you know, I'd rather just go back to the main chain, store wealth there, and then only use what I have across other chains as just means to do things I want to do.
Got it. So it's fair to say that if you're 90% crypto allocation to fiat, most of that is Bitcoin. You're not validating
not
anymore.
Not most, but a majority for sure. It's heavier Bitcoin.
Do you validate anymore or no? ETH?
No, I don't. No, I've gone out because so this gets into Chia, which I don't know if I brought up before, but that's Bram Cohen's protocol, which I still think is one of the most genius protocols ever invented. I mine a lot of Chia. I have a whole system, a whole server set up. So I've just allocated to what I think will produce the most value over the next, 10 or so years, right? And I think just storing Ethereum and validating on that way is, I think I can operationally use that money in better ways.
So let's take it into, just for a second, NFTs. Obviously Yuga's probably going to struggle in this cycle. I feel like there's so much new, fresh art. I feel like all eyes right now, you know, you and I were early to Ordinals. We were lucky, but maybe we were smart too. But a lot of ETH people obviously are coming over. A lot of Bored Apes, Mutant Apes are buying. It looks Node Monkeys feels like it was that gateway drug, especially that last run, like 3 or 4 or 5 weeks ago, whatever it was. I mean, you just saw like, you know, maybe I've pruned my timeline so cleanly that I didn't have a ton of Bored Apes and Mutant Apes, nothing against them, but maybe that was true. But I just feel like my timeline, I'm not seeing any pictures of those anymore. And obviously that's just that's a social cue, but I think so many of those people have moved to ETH. That guy who's got that show, I'm not even going to say his name, but that Nick guy was saying, what was it called? Artifact, which, you know, got bought by Nike. They might be going under, and they said that's BS. Whether it is or not, it doesn't matter. We got Bored Apes at like 14 or 15 ETH. Like, is ETH done, or is this like, can, you know, Azuki's kind of like, oh, everything's going to come back to us when we get this anime. Like, and I keep trying to tell folks, like, it's not that we don't love ETH and we love Terraforms, we love Chaos Roads, CryptoPunks, we love the on-chain stuff. But remember, not only are you having to compete against other things on ETH and on-chain stuff, you have to compete against Bitcoin Ordinals, which is all on-chain. So will they ever get, like, will the cycle go back to them? Or is the mother chain, the gravity of it, so powerful, kind of like you were saying, is the base currency, now that we're developing an ecosystem with L2s and runes, this could be big, big trouble for ETH.
I think you have to take a different mindset, where actually Yuga is going to be an entertainment and gaming studio company. And they left culture for Bored Ape as a art PFP behind, which I don't know if it ever was, but some would argue it was. Yeah. And that all the value is now being driven into the Coda and the other side ecosystem, right? Because they have to. That's their big bet. And so when I sold my apes, I did serendipitously got out pretty close to the top. But I held my Coda assets because I thought that they would drive all the value to other side. And apes are just part of that story, but they're not like the new burgeoning assets. Because you have to remember, value creation trickles down. So like they have to shift the sort of their optics to making people who are buying Coda assets and like participating in their games value themselves, because that's always been their model. And so I felt like, and people have realized that apes don't have the value in the ecosystem anymore. They're not getting free money drops, right? Like if you are optimizing for other side and getting and collecting resources, apes don't help you. Having good deeds, having good codas, having good maras, those are the ones that are actually producing value, because it is like kind of a rune-like game where you put basically stake them, you put them, you optimize your strategy to collect resources, take down. And so if you think of Yuga being one of the serious contenders in this gaming ecosystem for Ethereum, but they're also already moving like their ship parts to L2s. They started realizing that like, yeah, the gas fees are astronomical. Right. We have to move. And so all of Yuga's assets are going to start to move to L2s, right? And so I think you just start to see Yuga as like one of the biggest entertainment and like gaming studios that are going to compete against the things that are coming out on Solana, right? Or the things coming out on, I don't know, Base or something like that, right? And I think other companies coming out on Base. So it's just a different mindset. They're not a culture play anymore. Apes were the culture, and apes are kind of dead. And they'll still have a role. It just won't be as a big role, right? And I can see them float down to 5 ETH for sure. And they'll just be like kind of where, you know, a normal PFP sort of like to settle, right? Something that feels affordable to some, but not astronomically expensive. At least that's my philosophy, and that you'll be rewarded by playing their games the right way. And that's kind of an interesting model. But again, I think smart contracts are all about being able to decentrally compute things. And that's what cool games can do, can utilize those systems, where in some art can as well. But again, if you're looking at Ethereum for an art chain, I think it's less interesting as just another one of those like interesting gaming computation systems.
Interesting. Do you think, I mean, when you go for gaming, especially when it's a massive multiplayer online game like Other Side is, obviously you paid a lot for the apes. The apes did get better other deeds and were closer to kind of the heart and had probably a higher propensity for codas, but you're saying it's shifted to codas. Isn't this, I guess for me, and Azuki is a totally different play because they should have started doing their anime right away because they had such great graphics from the guy who did Fallout. Yeah. Yeah. The ambush stuff. And I've got the Twin Tigers jackets like, and I love Azuki and I love the people in it, but now I would say Azuki is that they miss the whole ordinals thing. It's a moonshot for them. Like, cause sometimes anime is good. Sometimes it sucks, but if they've got the great art, they've actually had a community stick around. A lot of the people are either secretly pissed or not. But we'll go back to Other Side. You're putting all your bets in this massive online game. Remember, not only do people have to engage in it and play, but then you have to keep engaging people and playing. And if you're in deed number 148,428, I know you have portals and stuff. Like, how do you keep a lot of people engaged? It's just, to me, it seems like such a, it's a gamble that was probably smart. And I know Yuga's smart and I'm no shade in them. I still have my CryptoPunk, but it just seems like a gamble to me now.
No, games are huge gambles. And they were able to raise money at the right perfect condition where they were able to raise a fuck ton of money.
I think it was
right?
600 million. Was it 450? Okay.
Yeah. Or it could have been combined, but game studios are hard. It is hit or miss, right? You either nail it and it blows up, or you miss it, you fumble, and then it just deteriorates over time. So we don't know how that is going to play out. And again, Yuga is the master at continually trying to drive value down the line. And so, yeah, once I think We don't know. And it really depends on what is the next evolution after this Mara Coda game, right? The Mara Coda is really just basically, if you're into runes, you should be playing the Mara Coda game because it's actually more interesting to look at, but you're generating resources that are basically runes because they are token based. They're just done in a different way, right? And so like, to me, they're more interesting to play with because you can actually emphasize strategy and you can outskill another player to earn more. Where in runes, there's really not an outskill. No one's like really come up with like a skill-based rune generator. I'm just trying to...
Not yet. And this is a perfect transition back to Bitcoin, back to runes. You know, you've got Arcic. Obviously, you got Runestone. There's some cool things going on. A lot of it's gamified. Like you said, like welcome to Ponzonomics. Yeah. What are your thoughts on runes? And we actually have Ilan having our first question here. Actually, Ilan, welcome. Thanks for asking the questions. He's been, he's an old friend of mine and actually a fellow Zuki. He's awesome. But he asked a question and Brent, I think you can help with this here. Let me post it up here. How do I get it up? Hold on. I'll get it up in a sec, but he says, hey, GMGM, aside from on-chain narrative, what's your thoughts on maturation where OFC ordinals are early cycle catching the euphoria? Don't need to do anything, but exist. Will ultimately evolve much like ETH, where people begin to call for utility and only a few projects are provenance on BTC, i.e. punks. So how would you answer that question?
Well, what's so great is you don't need utility on ordinals because it's really fucking hard to do. It's like you just really can't do a lot of utility because there is no, until you get legit layer two Bitcoin infrastructure set up and you could stake your ordinal, which accesses an entire smart contract network layer, right? So I think that is where utility drives. It won't be on ordinals. It will be on L2s that access ordinals as like a base token, right? Like, okay, you know, we even saw this with Merlin. People were actually staking Node Monkeys. You can't do anything other than earn whatever their token point system is. But like in the future, you know, does staking low inscriptions produce more value or access certain things, right? And I think that's where you start to have that utility battle. And now you're just playing another L2 game where ordinals can just be there. I mean, they can just exist. And it's, you know, do you have early inscription, which is like graffiti? Do you have the early PFPs, which are the small communities that access and leverage, you know, the social aspect? Or are you in like the massive now new 10K series that are happening? So I don't know. I think utility, you know, people might look at runes and be like, oh, should every ordinal generate some shitcoin with it? I'm like, no, doesn't need to. You know, you can do that if you wanted to, but you don't have to. I don't know. I just feel like because of the restrictive nature about what you can put on chain directly on Bitcoin will prevent people having to think about, oh, utility first, art second.
And there's no royalties baked in. I guess that's the thing in my journey. I got an NFTs late. You know, I got a CryptoPunk and I didn't buy it at an all-time high, but now that ETH to the dollar is worth so much, if I sold it, I'd get way less ETH and way more money. Yeah, it's like the worst thing in the world. You know, it's like you've double lost. You have less ETH and you get more dollars that are that go into taxes. But the thing that I learned from the last cycle is the best utility any collection can have, whether that's PFPs or art, is no utility, because then you know what's baked in. Like you said, when I buy things, it's if everything goes to zero, am I going to kick myself and look in the mirror and be like, you FOMOing douchebag. Like, why did you buy this? Where like the Terraform behind me, like I got in, obviously I was not an early adopter, but once I looked at the whole, you know, at Math Castles, I looked at all the analysis on it. Like I was a math kid growing up and I love art, and my mom was an art historian. And I just, to me, that blend, that's why on Bitcoin and on ordinals, that's why generative art to me is like, it's just that perfect, beautiful sweet spot, but no utility is the best utility. And I think because ordinals 100% on chain, and because it wasn't very easy to do, and I'm sure it can be done, but royalties were never baked in. So the collections, you know, remember the Azukis and the Bored Apes were dependent on those and just making boatloads of money by just people trading. Oh, now yeah. you've got to, the utility is much harder now because then you have to drop. And what did Azuki do with elementals? They dropped and it immediately diluted the whole collection. And then they tried to appease the OG Azuki holders. And then it screwed the elementals. And then it kind of ended up screwing everybody. And then they announced all the anime and stuff like that. And I'm rooting for Azuki. I love it. I still have the first one that I ever bought at Mint Day. That was my first big win, flipping Azukis and stuff like that. But utility to me is dangerous. And I don't go near it anymore.
To me, it's the utility for art is the access to the artists, where you get that much more so than even traditional art. I mean, I get, so one of my favorite pieces in trad art is from Jake Stuckey. He makes these really awesome dreamscaped, sketch drawings. Like they're of his own dreams that he just makes, and they're huge and they're awesome. But he sends me a Christmas card with like a one of one, like small sketch. So I actually collect small pieces of his art, and that gives me access to him, and like I could reach out. And that's usually very uncommon in the traditional art world, but in the new art world, that owning a piece basically gives you this direct line of access to an artist, yeah. which is so amazing. And so the utility is actually just being able to be this special collector where you can engage the artist. And that's something where, like, you know, again, I have a very small group of collectors for Scordinals, for reversions, is like they're just being able to reward those holders. And then my chat, I'm always in there. Like, if you ping me, I'm probably going to talk to you in the next 30
minutes. Yeah, I don't think I've ever pinged you with a question, like, no matter what time of day it was. And, you know, obviously I got a family, so I have my schedule's probably a lot more normal than yours, but I don't think you've ever not gotten back to me under 3 or 4 minutes.
Like, yeah.
Yes, so I'm like, thanks, Brendan.
And that's kind of, I think, hidden utility that I think will always exist because of the transparency of just collecting digital art work. And so, I don't know, there'll always be something there, but that is like the base no utility. It's just that simple utility. Now, because if an artist just dropped shit and they completely fucked off and you never were able to engage with them, I think they would not do very well.
Yeah, that's a really good point. And a lot of the artists who've been the most successful are very good and warm and engaging. I will say, especially in Ordinals, a little bit with like Chaos Rhodes, I went back and forth with him a couple times, but in Ordinals, like I felt like I've made a lot of friends. So I'm a big fan, and these are no new names. Like, and I'm not an original. I just look at what things you like and BZ and Brissy like, and you know, but I've become friends with Lemon Haze. We're DMing all the time. And it's super cool. Cause I'm talking to you. You're, like I said, one of my favorite types of people in this space. You're a coder, but you're also an artist. And one of my best friends growing up, who Disco knows quite well too, was of that. Like, he just had that left brain, right brain mind. But Lemon Haze, I talk to Otto all the time, who's Japanese, who actually told me, we chat all the time. And he actually told me, he goes, he's watching the show today, and we're going to finish the show in, you know, 10, 15, 20 minutes with a question that he had. But he told me, I said, hey, let me bring you on a show, or let's just talk on the phone, cause I have this project I want to work on you with. And he goes, oh, I translate everything you write, and then I have ChatGPT translate it back. I was like, damn. Yeah. And I never would have suspected, cause ChatGPT now is so good at casual, like, yo, what's going on? It's not like he's like, hello. Yes. And you know, but I'm talking with him, Lemon Haze, and now Duresh. And I think we chatted. He's like, dude, I'm so psyched to have you as a collector. And one of the reasons that got me into art from the PFPs was this collection on ETH. I didn't even realize at the time it was on AWS called Nuclear Nerds, but a lot of those people were photographers. Like, one guy's up in Tromsø and he takes pictures of the Northern Lights. He does tours. So I bought that off him. I've got it here. I'll flip it later when you're talking. Nice, this awesome boat, broken old boat with the Northern Lights. And I started collecting from people, and I realized I like collecting art from people that I got to know and like. And now, because we're so new to the Ordinal space and it's so new to everybody, like Hardo, Lemon Haze, Otto, now Duresh, and all these people, Intrepid, who I love, and that whole story of his family at the boat at sea being stranded in COVID for 2 years. Like, I'm talking with them, and actually some of these guys I'm helping bring over to Ordinals, and it's such a cool feeling to like be in that scene. Like you said, I always say now, like, you know, the Studio 54 era, like in the Soho era, like there's always like the coolest spot in the room, and we're not even the coolest people in the world, but I would say the shit that's going on in Ordinals right now and NFTs, I'm not excluding that, and maybe even Solana, but this ecosystem that we're in and the people we're meeting, I would say it's the most unknown epicenter of taste making and cool that there ever was. We're meeting artists from all over the world, and I can go to Paris and grab lunch, or Japan and grab lunch with Otto and Duresh, and then go to New York and hang out with, like, it's like a card or a pass to hang with interesting people, because in our real lives, we can't even have these conversations. They'd be like, what, wait, hold on. You start over at that first sentence. Like you bought Bitcoin. You're like, oh shit. I got to explain 71 things to you to explain how cool the art scene is here. So
it's also your friends that you make through life are usually localized to the places you live, which is going to basically squeeze the type of people you actually really want to interact constantly with, like people just like you or diverse enough to like engage. So when you open that up into an entire digital sense, you're going to meet people that are much more akin to you, you know, and soulbound in a way. And so you start to develop relationships that map the entire world rather than just, these are just my buddies I grew up with. Now I still love the buddies I grow up with, but I'll have 10% to share with them versus, you know, me and you, we can vibe for hours and I know we can go grab drinks and share a bunch of other stuff. So it's just, I think that's what NFTs have culturally aligned people to.
Yeah.
And which has always been a really like probably the most fascinating aspect to this type of.
Yeah. You, me, or so many in a lot of the groups we're in or on the crypto Twitter timeline, like we could literally sit down for dinner. And if we wanted to, we could probably talk for like 12 or 13 hours and just keep drinking. Like there's 100 things, you know, you and I will talk for hours at a time and there's still so much to be covered. So let's circle around now and just, I want to get your opinion on runes. We'll finish with this, but just so I don't forget, Otto's question was, And you and I have talked about this before, how art can actually be done on runes. But first, I want to get your opinion on runes in general. Like, is runes just, I think Casey called it literally like crack, like Ponzonomics crack for blockchains. Like, it's just everything exemplified. What is your take on runes and how do you approach it?
No, I think he's right. I think it's, again, it requires a lot of attention. It's game mechanics, so it's creating incentives for you to play the game, but you have to absolutely focus. And I don't have that focus to keep playing runes, but it's also such simple games to where the complexity doesn't make me interested, where, like I just said, playing Other Side with the Mara games is a slightly more interesting to keep continually doing that. But also, I feel like one, based on what Otto's saying, is like the idea with like, can art have a playground in runes? Absolutely. I mean, it's a meta protocol on top of already a meta protocol. You can do whatever you want. And I think we'll see a lot of really unique takes. And we're seeing that across the board anywhere with shitcoins. Shitcoins are just, again, it's just tokenizing some sort of slightly value, and they're just, you can use them in any other way, right?
Right.
And
so block nine, stuff, pizza sats, rares, whatever.
Yeah, but
recursion,
not even that.
Parent child.
Is just even in like the Ethereum or the L2 base or even Solana sense, like you can take tokens and make them whatever. I mean, when the first Wolf game came out, where it created these like game systems just built on tokens, like, you know, people are like, oh shit, you can do that. And so I think people will start to adopt some of those models to runes. So they're interesting to look at, but I don't have time to like sit there and play the game at this point in time. Right now, if Otto dropped something that was art based runes, I mean, maybe I'm interested at this point.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. So as we get back to runes in general, what could I Or is this more of a more detailed offline chat where I just hook the three of us up and we just like go in Discord and just be like, here's how I'm thinking of it. Cause I know you are thinking about that, right?
Yeah, absolutely. It's just leveraging the mechanics of runes as a tool to produce something creative is fun. That's a fun exercise, right? Regardless if you're there to, you know, have a run up, moonshot it and then dump, right? Like that's the only way you make money, right? There hasn't been a non-zero sum game rune deployment, right?
Well, hold on. Can I challenge that for 1 second? Cause that's a huge question. So let's go up a step. You got Shiba Inu and Dogecoin. I haven't looked at them recently, but I think the market caps are 21 and 17 billion respectively. That was from a couple of weeks ago.
Yeah, they're huge. Yeah.
Insane. And obviously Elon, like a couple of weeks ago, was like, hey, at some point in the future, Doge, you'll be able to buy a Tesla with Doge, which is funny. Like Doge, Lambo, you know, millionaires, but they haven't gone to zero yet. And sometimes even in the lowest bear, you know, last whatever it was, the FTX blow up, 3R's capital, those things were still worth, I don't know what it, we'll call it, 10 billion or 9 billion. Like they were still worth billions of dollars. So does Leonidas's group Runestone, or does Arsic, do these have a shot at just being an effing meme and holding value over time?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I'm not saying they don't go to zero. I don't think anything goes to zero. I mean, Bitcoin Cash still isn't at zero, right? Like there are things that should have died. I mean, Eternity, which is AER Eternity, that
sounds
was
like,
one of the
sounds
first
like a perfume.
it was the first ICO I got in after Ethereum. Still hasn't gone to zero. I mean, it's really fucking close to zero, but it still isn't. It's still not zero, right? And I still hold a fuck ton of those. So you know, not every move I make is a win. And so like it won't ever go to zero. But what I mean by non-zero sum is that unless there's an innovation being introduced, then it's just Ponzi at that point, right? Everything is built on Ponzi first. So I'm not saying that, you know, that's a bad thing. I'm just saying that not introducing an innovation, either it be through a creative mechanism, even game entertainment sense can do that. Most of them don't, right? So most runes will just be copy paste of themselves. And so they're not interesting until you get to a point where, you know, something gets introduced. And even just by participating, that has value.
Like, so basically if hypothetically Arsic team could develop the first runes decks and use their rune as an underpinning trade in, trade out, or something like that. So then you're saying you're kind of creating value on you're going a layer below the Ponzonomics. So I guess you're slightly less Ponzonomics.
Yeah, exactly. You slightly have a little bit additive too. Or if someone were to create a more art driven, where the production of that is actually contributing to art in a really interesting way, that has, you know, some positive outcomes.
Is that almost fractional, like what's it called, ETH 404 or whatever it is?
I'm a huge
that fractionalized the fractionalized token. So you're saying on runes could absolutely do that. So Azuki could come over and have art on the runes and you have to own a certain amount to have a full piece of something.
I don't know how it would work in ordinals, and maybe there's another protocol you'd have to implement on top of it to make it work. But I'm a fan of 404s because it's this intersection between a piece that is art driven, but also token driven all together at once. And one of my favorite ones that I've a couple guys here in Austin implemented is called Trash. And it's on Base. And you, if you get enough tokens of it, right, you go to their LP pool, you get one Trash, it will generate you actual rarity. So they actually put rarity into the fungible tokens, and you have this 404 token that has certain different rarities. And the rarity of that token is you can then burn it for an actual ERC-721. And based on what the rare of the 404 will produce better outcomes for the ERC-721. But then you can burn the ERC-721 and re-roll back to the 404 and keep trying that again. But the fee that you have to pay in the contract goes to the liquidity pool to drive the 404 price up. So you can keep swapping, trying to find your perfect image. And the art is beautiful. But what you're doing is by swapping, you're artificially starting to inflate with the fees, paying the 404 fee, the liquidity of that one, because you're just contributing to the pool. So it's one of those things that those type of mechanics can start to be thought about, where it is a meme coin, it is art, the mechanics are incentivized, like there's some really cool stuff there. So I do get obsessed with those type of things. I just don't think runes are quite there yet.
So you think the runes technology at the beginning, like it will get there, but because Bitcoin behaves differently with UTXOs and stuff, it's just, it's not smart contract. It's not as easy to pull off.
As easy to implement. Yeah.
So for you, I guess the net is like, if there's some cool stuff, so it sounds like your underlying is hold a lot of Bitcoin, but if there's runes or anything like that, or to you, what you're gravitated most towards is responsibly buying art that you love to connect with the artists, the communities. And it sounds like, even though you're very self-aware that it's all Ponzonomics, if it's a cool enough game like Trash, I know obviously those are your buddies too, so I'm sure you're dabbling in there just for the, like, I'm going to have to wrap my head around that. But we were telling me my the hemispheres are like, oh, fuck, like how cool is that? But it sounds like you're saying there's so many cool things you could do. You're not opposed to playing some of these games, but you're going to be pretty selective based on the people you trust and just simply based on the game and the tech. And, you know, obviously any rugs you're not going to be a part of, but so are you excited about runes, or are you just like, this is crack?
Yeah. No, it's absolutely crack, but crack can be fun. again, I'm a active observer and interested in starting to think about it from my perspective, but I don't need to play the games that currently exist. Like, I think, again, also the value ran up so fast on the airdrop, taking the free money from the airdrops, that's just more Bitcoin. So if I've already earned and I don't have to play the game, which I'll probably lose most games, and I can take the Bitcoin, I'm going to take the Bitcoin, right? That's, to me, that's easy. Oh, you're taking your dogs? I'll keep talking but again, going back to the question about, you know, could you make something more interesting? There's absolutely, I mean, DMTs is another thing, which is a protocol like runes, built on bitmaps that does really novel stuff. And I was a huge fan of the Natalie's that came out. And so I don't know. There are many. I think that's going to give people a blueprint to do more really interesting stuff on top of the ordinal theory, right? Oh, I think we lost your. I think you muted. Yeah.
Yeah. Thank you. I appreciate that. How is DMT and NatCats and Natalie's? How is that different than runes?
A lot of it is just the production of using predefined data already on chain to create dynamic pieces, right? So it's like generative art, right? Where you already have data to influence what that art is. And they just created this where it's a low, like the JSON package that determines the art piece is like kind of like it's to generate the SVG is stored at a level that's just like, it's just very small. It's tiny, right? Yeah, 404 is an alpha. Absolutely, dude. At the end, it's just an awesome addition. And I think the EIP standard will probably pick it up and run with it. I think DMTs are just a really interesting use case of like creating a new meta protocol, which runes is, and same with BRC20s, right? And just expanding, right? We're going to get in a year from now, dude, Blutoshi, we're going to have 100 different types of things like DMT, things like runes.
Wow, you're everyone saying that's just two of, I know you were saying in another chat we had that VCs and not just, but a lot of money is coming in for these L2s that you're saying, are these all going to be competing, or is it different ways of expressing creativity, and the ones that suck get pruned and the ones that people adopt, or where there's a lot of money, where they FOMO us into adopting, are going to win this next L2 raise.
And I think, and let me differentiate between a meta protocol and an L2. They both are built fundamentally on ordinal theory. A lot of them are. Some of them are actually not. But like DMT, runes, BRC20s are built closer to ordinal theory and in Taproot Engine, and like basically being able to access, but they're usually just run on indexers and they don't have like a full EVM, where L2s are a consensus. They should be a consensus driven EVM to process inputs to create outputs and then put that on chain. And those are how you can get smart contracts sort of on Bitcoin. But
so is Lightning considered the first L2 then?
Oh yeah, for sure. Yeah, okay. Lightning Network.
But absolutely. Lightning obviously has had,
but it's not a smart contract.
It hasn't had great adoption. Yeah. So are there, is runes and all these other things, DMT, is this paving the way to truly get to an L2, or is the L2 solution totally separate from all of these?
They're totally separate because again, you're not computing on runes. It's just a different type of implementation of an ordinal. And L2s again, and in most of it to me is are you adding some sort of smart contract network on top of it, right? But you're verifying the outputs on Bitcoin, right? Where I ran a smart contract function call, here are my inputs, it does a thing I expect it to do, and my outputs are saved on Bitcoin, right? And so now I have the provenance that I did this transaction and it's saved on Bitcoin, right? Like that's to me the L2, where we're able to do more interesting things in those. But a lot of them, I don't know how it's going to work, because again, you're dealing with like two very different systems. I mean, it's why like Stax has done well, but also not done well at the same time, right? Because they were so early to the game. And but they're making it where they have an entire new protocol as an L1, but using Bitcoin to secure the network by like locking and paying stackers with Bitcoin, and then it would move to a proof of burn system. So it just fundamentally like vampires itself, like or leeches itself to Bitcoin, but it isn't technically a Bitcoin L2, but they're very closely connected.
So in it's centralized off, and then it connects.
It's all centralized off. They just have their own blockchain that they're running, but their block producers get incentivized with Bitcoin, and then they have Bitcoin validators, right, that are getting rewarded in stacks, and they're mining. It's and that's how they make the connection, by having two different validator sets, and that's how they kind of tie themselves to Bitcoin. You have actually two different types of block producers in a weird way. Where one gets rewarded in stacks and the other one gets rewarded.
Is stacks a true like proof of work or no? It's like, what kind of blockchain is it?
It's a proof of stake. So it's you're staking. Okay. Yeah. Stacks on one side and Bitcoin on the other.
And it is, you're saying it is decentralized. Cause I know a lot of the ETH layer.
But it is decentralized. Yeah.
Cause a lot of the ETH layer twos, I don't think any of them are fully decentralized yet. They're still controlling forces that have multi-sigs that can flip stuff on and off and make tweaks, correct? But you're saying no, stacks on the Bitcoin side is different? Or am I comparing apples to Ferraris?
Yeah, kind of apples and oranges. Usually people start with the multi-sig to bridge, and then they flip to their subset of validators. And usually they like to keep them small with heavy machinery, because not everyone can go buy. So they're just more centralized because you have 100 validators that are running basically better machines, so you can process transactions faster, right? That's kind of the idea. And Stacks is more decentralized. I mean, it used to be called Blockstacks. Muneeb started this back in, I mean, shit, they went through YC in fucking 2014, 15, like very, very close to when Ethereum was launching.
Right.
So they've been around for a long time. And that's why I'm saying is like, they've done well, obviously they're a top 100 coin, but like they haven't done as well as I thought they would. Because it is an Ethereum, or sorry, it isn't EVM like. It's not using Solidity or anything, but it's similar enough to Ethereum, but still rooted in Bitcoin. And it actually is interesting because it creates a deflationary Bitcoin network if it started to turn on the proof of burn, which is instead of rewarding, you burn Bitcoin or part of the Bitcoin that gets staked. So there's they have some mechanisms that were originally.
Oh my God. I mean, I'm really honestly going to have to listen to this again. Cause at the end of the show, like you explaining this is there's, it sounds like we are at the beginning of the Bitcoin ecosystem. Ordinals, I feel like, kicked it off where we could then stay for art and culture within our own ecosystem, which Bitcoin never had. And one could argue, you know, the ETFs are obviously where the whale money is for the narrative Bitcoin is gold. But I would also argue now it has settlers there, right? People who not only love Bitcoin, but love the art, love the culture. And like you said, connecting with artists. And it sounds like you're saying now that KC, maybe Lightning before it, has kind of broken through to create this ordinals layer. Now everything, like we've got the Cambrian explosion now. Is that fair?
Oh, 100%. Absolutely. I mean, the number of L2s I've seen come across, like from a, you know, angel investor perspective is like absolutely crazy. A lot of them look good and a lot of them look like
a joke.
Kind of future rugs. I'm like, I don't know about this one. They're like, yeah, we just run an indexer. I'm like, you mean you just run your own sort of indexer and it's not decentralized and it's just you, right? Like that type of stuff, right? So no, I think, yeah, like you're going to see some crazy shit. And again, these ZK rollups can still work with Bitcoin. And so again, you're just going to see a lot of different stuff because of the inflows into Bitcoin. So you just have, it just feels fresh again, right? Ordinals, basically ordinals prettied up Bitcoin. And in that you're like, holy shit, there's a whole nother layer of value. So yeah, I think it's been, I mean, right. Casey has done, the whole ordinal team has done some incredible stuff to really kickstart this.
Raph, like, yeah. And it's secured the network better. Like that was kind of like so many people were hodling Bitcoin. There wasn't a ton of transactions. Now we've got transactions and miners are getting rewarded. Right? And even Luke Dash Jr. came off his high horse and, you know, or somebody kicked him off the high horse and said like, dude, we're making so much more money now. Like what are you doing? Like miners, like let's mine the, A busy blockchain is a valuable blockchain, right? Like in a not busy one, like that block space is cheaper. It's not the end of the world, but it's a different equation, especially when you need to kind of secure the network. I think this is a good place to stop. We've covered so much stuff, more than I ever imagined on this show. But like I said, when Brandon and I start talking, we'll go and go and go. But it's a good place to stop. Brandon, do you want to share, you know, where people can find you? Most people on this show probably know who you are, but let people know where they can find you. And then if you want to talk about reversion.life, which I'm super excited about, or whatever you want to chat about, to wrap this up, and then I'll just do a little disclosure, not financial advice. But what do you want to tell folks out there?
Yeah, absolutely. So obviously you can find me at Brennan_ETH on Twitter. I still have the ETH there as a namesake. Started the Scornal project. You can find us on Discord/Scornal. And then for holders, we're doing this reversion drop. So it's a free claim on March 26th. I take a snapshot on the 24th. You'll be able to get as many reversions as you have Scornals. And then if you are whitelisted in the Discord through the cultivator role, you'll be able to pay 0.01 and for any unclaimed ones. And then it falls back to the public after that for the same price for anyone else. So that will all be probably on March 27th because it's a 24-hour claim. But yeah, so really excited. Again, pushing the ordinal envelope a little bit further with simulations and doing unique stuff with sats and
it's fun stuff. And I'm excited. I'm a holder of Scornals, and that's Scordinals. If you go on to Magic Eden, and I had fun making mine, and that was a cool time last, we figured, what was it, May or June. And reversion.life is super cool because basically now we all own one of these or a couple, if you got a couple Scornals, of these 256 pieces of art that are all generated block by block, starting at the halving, where everybody's got a different section and you just own your section. So I love the mental community model of we started Squirtles together. Now we're all going to the Petri dish together. And you know,
yeah,
I guess you could be a super nerd and figure out who your neighbors actually are. But
I hope people start to swap for their own so they can get like meta squares, right? Where like a 2x2.
Amoeba Petri dish land. Like I'm the king of the Northwest Territories with 117 and 24. Like start boxing people around. And well, super cool. And thanks for hosting with me, Disco. Hope you had a great trip. We miss you, but Brennan, always a thrill, and it's fun to be on the other side, to be the neophyte and see how someone in 5, 6, 7, 8 cycles pre Mount Gox, pre almost everything, right? Where you're just like, you know, giving away Bitcoin, like just to test stuff. God. Like, and now the amount of money, be like, oh my God, you know, my big story is, my big story in 2015 is I got a Trezor for like, it was like 0.7 or 0.9 Bitcoin. I'm like, oh, aren't I awesome? You'd be like, dude, I was just like, hey, you guy on the street, here's 600 Bitcoin. Like, let's do a little experiment here, you know? Like, obviously back then that's just how it was. And I know, like, no regrets.
It was a cash system. Yeah. Right. It was a cash. I just was living in Satoshi's white paper and it was peer to peer cash system. And so I treated it as such and regret it ever since.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. But you know what? You're here and you've obviously done well. And the cool thing is somebody said it in another show. I think it was on Good Things Show. Like, you've a lot of people from 2010 or the Trace Myers, a lot of these guys who had the thesis, you know, they were on there for a while and they were probably like, wait, I have a lot of money. Like, I don't need to be talking about this anymore. Like, it's probably better if I just kind of go in the back and go anon. But you know, you love the space, you stuck with it, and obviously it shows. And I'm sure part of that is because, you know, being part coder and being an artist, you're like, no, this is fascinating to me. And if I retired, quote unquote, where would I go? I'd go right back here because this is where the coolest shit's happening. You know,
same shit. Yeah, right. Exactly.
So now you get to play and be retired and be all that fun stuff. So, well, Brennan, thank you, everybody. This is not financial advice on the show. We are not investment advisors. And any other disclaimer I could say, like, take everything with a grain of salt. If you're going to degen and FOMO, sometimes it's better to wait till the eye of Sauron and the eye of FOMO is somewhere else. And then, you know, you get your NatCat or get your OMB or you get your Node Monk or whatever. But just degen responsibly, have fun, and keep watching the show. And I always should say this at the beginning of the show, like, this is out on the Twitter timeline. Brennan, we're over 200 folks live right now, which is pretty cool. And then more watch after, which is super fun. But if you can, folks, again, this should have been beginning of the show, retweet this stuff and like it, share it, tell others about it, because if you don't, nobody will know about it, because we're trying to kind of give the highest signal we can in this space and not just what's the latest drop and the latest degen thing, because that gets old and burn out fast. So appreciate y'all, everybody. And until next time, Brennan, thank you so much.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Thanks for having me on. And yeah, look forward to the next one.
Awesome. Bye, guys.